Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling something huge in modern work life, this idea that being busy means you're actually getting things done.
Right, and our mission here is to dig into this really counterintuitive framework called essentialism. It's about a disciplined pursuit of doing less, but doing it better.
Exactly. So for you listening, if you want that quick, deep understanding without getting buried in data, we're going to pull out the core ideas.
We're looking at the framework, sure, but also the surprising behavioral shifts that help people stop majoring in minor activities, as the source puts it.
Yeah, stop spinning their wheels and actually make their biggest contribution.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a really great story to kick things off. An executive totally drowning, great performer, but stressed out of his mind.
The classic scenario, saying yes to everything.
Totally. Overworked, underutilized. He was actually thinking about retiring. He was so burnt out. But his mentor gave him some pretty wild advice.
Let me guess, something totally unexpected.
You got it. The mentor said, look, stay, but from this moment on, only do the things you do if you were some high-paid consultant brought in to fix things, and crucially, don't tell anyone.
Wow. Oh. Okay. Just operate like a consultant in stealth mode, the idea being to force him to be ruthless about what's important.
Exactly. But, you know, I gotta ask, if you tried that today, just silently ignoring requests, wouldn't that get you fired? How does that actually work politically?
Well, that's the critical point, isn't it? The essentialist isn't just ignoring things randomly. They're fundamentally changing their decision criteria.
Okay.
So this executive stopped asking the weak question, the default question. Can I possibly fit this request in?
And he moved to something much tougher.
Much tougher. The real essentialist test. Is this the absolute most important thing I could be doing with my time and resources right now?
And if the answer wasn't a clear, enthusiastic yes,
then it had to be a no. Maybe a polite no, but still a no.
So what happened? Did the secret experiment blow up?
Quite the opposite. It worked incredibly well. He got his personal life back, started exercising again, having dinner with his wife, you know.
That alone sounds like a win.
Huge win. But get this. His performance ratings actually went up. He ended up earning one of the biggest bonuses of his career.
No way. So doing less actually made him more valuable.
Precisely. Less activity, but much higher contribution. It showed that his previous busyness wasn't essential at all.
So what was the root mistake he was making, the one so many of us, you know, fall into?
It's really buying into the non-essentialist myth, this idea that you can and even should try to do it all, have it all.
Which leads to that feeling of constantly moving but going nowhere.
Exactly. You're busy, you feel busy, but you're not actually productive. You mistake motion for progress.
It's funny how language plays into that, too. I read somewhere that the word priority, it was always singular for centuries, right?
And it's absolutely fascinating, isn't it? Entered English in the 1400s, singular for 500 years, one single most important thing.
And then sometime in the 1900s, we started talking about priorities, plural.
Right. And we somehow convinced ourselves it was logical to have multiple first things, multiple priorities. It's inherently contradictory.
And that kind of thinking created the chaos we just accept now.
Mm-hmm. And the frustrating part is, this often traps the most capable people. Mm-hmm. The source calls it the clarity paradox.
Okay, explain that. How does success lead to failure?
It's this predictable cycle. Phase one, you have real clarity about your purpose, and that leads to success. Makes sense.
Right.
Phase two, success gets you noticed. You become the go-to person. Suddenly you have way more options, more demands on your time.
Okay, that sounds good initially. More opportunities.
It seems good. But then comes phase three. All those options and demands start pulling you in different directions. Your effort gets diffused, spread thin.
I see where this is going.
And phase four, you're so spread out, so diluted, that you undermine the very clarity that got you success in the first place. You lose focus on what truly matters.
So the pursuit of success actually becomes the catalyst for failure.
In a way, yes, which leads to the core warning. If you don't prioritize your life, someone else definitely will. Your boss, your colleagues, clients.
Okay, so the answer is getting off that default path, embracing essentialism.
Right. It means consciously, deliberately figuring out the vital few things from the trivial many.
And then what? Just ignore the trivial many.
Well, eliminate them where possible, certainly. And then design systems to make executing the vital few much smoother. It's about living by design, not just reacting to everything by default.
Living by design. I like that.
And the logic behind it, fundamentally, is the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule.
Yes, 80-20. 20% of your effort gets you 80% of your results.
Exactly. Essentialism basically says, okay, let's accept that most things don't matter that much. We need to focus ruthlessly on that critical 20%.
I get the principle, but applying it feels hard. Like the Warren Buffett example, 90% of his wealth from just 10 investments, that's extreme discernment.
It is extreme.
Mm-hmm.
But think about what that implies. It means he said no, rigorously, hundreds of times, to things that probably look like pretty good opportunities.
Things that would have just diluted his focus and capital.
Precisely. He didn't want good. He only wanted the truly essential few.
Okay, but for most of us, we're not Warren Buffett making 10 huge bets. We have dozens of small, necessary things we have to do each day. How does 80-20 apply then?
It applies to how you allocate your best energy and focus. It's not about literally ignoring 80% of your tasks, maybe, but it is about recognizing where your highest value comes from, that vital 20%, and fiercely protecting the time and resources needed for that work first.
So structure your day around the 20% first.
Yes, before letting the less important 80% crowd it out. Anything else is basically mismanaging your own contribution potential.
And making that shift requires facing up to real trade-offs, doesn't it? You can't do everything.
Absolutely. The non-essentialist tries to avoid trade-offs, tries to straddle everything, and they end up making trade-offs anyway, just badly and by default.
Like that story about Erin Callan, the former CFO at Lehman Brothers.
Oh, that's such a tragic example.
Yeah.
She didn't consciously decide, I am sacrificing my entire personal life for work.
It just happened.
It just eroded. Boundary by boundary, small yes after small yes, until work was literally all that was left. She made those huge trade-offs without ever really choosing them.
Which underscores the power of making choices deliberately, by design.
Exactly. You either make the hard choices yourself, or you let the world, your boss, your overflowing inbox, make them for you. And they probably won't choose what's truly essential to you.
Okay, so discern the vital few, accept trade-offs. What else is key?
Well, here's another paradox for you. Essentialists actually explore more options initially than non-essentialists do.
Really? That seems backward. I thought they were about focus.
They explore more options before committing. They cast a wide net. They look around. They gather information systematically. But then, after that exploration, they commit deeply and go big on only one or two truly essential things.
Okay. So the exploration is part of the discernment process.
Exactly. And to do that well, you need space. Mental space, physical space.
Yeah. That quiet time we always feel guilty about taking. But the source says it's not a luxury. It's essential.
It's a strategic necessity. You have to build it in, like that company, Frank O'Brien's, with their Do Not Call Mondays.
First Monday of the month, right. No calls, no email, no meetings.
Yep. And if someone says they're too busy for it, that's actually a red flag. It means there's probably a non-essential overload happening that needs to be addressed.
Even individuals are doing this. Jeff Weiner at LinkedIn scheduling empty blocks of time.
Up to 2 hours a day sometimes.
Yeah.
In 30-minute chunks. He calls it his single most valuable productivity tool. Just blank space to think.
Not filler time, actual thinking time.
Critical thinking time.
Mm-hmm.
And linked to that space is another core practice. Protect the asset.
Meaning yourself, your energy.
Your physical and mental well-being. Specifically, sleep. Essentialists prioritize sleep without apology.
Which goes against the grain, doesn't it? Especially for high achievers. Sleep is often seen as weak.
Totally. There's this hustle culture stigma. But the science is just brutal on this. Pulling an all-nighter, or even just getting 4 or 5 hours a night for a week.
What does it do?
It leads to cognitive impairment, equivalent to having a blood alcohol level of 0.1%.
Wow. That's legally drunk in most places.
Exactly. We'd never praise someone for showing up drunk, but we wear sleep deprivation like a badge of honor. It's crazy.
So the essentialist view is that more sleep equals more productivity.
Significantly more high-quality productivity. That extra hour of sleep might unlock several hours of focused, effective work that you just couldn't achieve when you're running on fumes.
So the real challenge for an ambitious person might not be working harder.
It might be having the discipline to say no to some shiny opportunity, specifically so you can go take a nap or just get enough sleep.
That's a powerful reframe. Protect the asset.
And extending that idea of protecting the mind. Play.
Play. Like games. That seems frivolous.
Not frivolous at all, according to essentialism. Play is defined here as doing something just for the sheer joy of it. Doesn't have to be productive. Flying a kite, listening to music, doodling.
Okay. And why is that essential?
Because play is crucial for exploration, for creativity. It boosts brain plasticity, adaptability. The source says Nothing fires up the brain like play.
Huh. Are there examples of this?
Big ones. Newton supposedly conceived of gravity while daydreaming, essentially playing in his mind under the apple tree. Watson and Crick were literally playing with molecular shapes when they figured out the double helix.
So play isn't wasted time, it's incubation time.
Precisely. It allows for non-linear connections and insights.
Oh.
Okay, so we've explored, we've protected our energy. Mm. Now comes the hard part for many. Elimination.
Saying no.
Saying no. Often. Gracefully but firmly. The absolute key is separating the decision itself from the relationship. You can say no to the request without damaging the connection.
That sounds good in theory.
Think of Stephen Covey. Ran into an old friend, got invited to a spontaneous dinner.
Sounds nice, right? Sure. Hard to turn down.
But Covey had already planned a date night with his young daughter. And he actually said, not tonight. Cynthia and I have a special date planned. He chose the essential commitment over the unexpected, socially pressured one.
Okay, family makes it a bit clearer. But what about your boss? Saying a flat no can feel career limiting.
Totally. So you need strategies. There's the graceful no but. You say no to the immediate request, but offer an alternative or future possibility.
Like, I'm swamped with Project X right now, but I could potentially look at this next month.
Exactly. Or, I can't do that, but maybe person Y could help. Or even, I'd love to, but I'm focused on finishing my book right now. Let's connect once it's done. You state the boundary, but keep the door open relationally.
But what if the boss just keeps piling things on?
The ultimate power move there is to shift the burden of the trade-off back to them. Don't just absorb it. You say, yes, I can take on this new project. To give it the focus it deserves, which of my current priorities should I deprioritize?
Ooh, okay. That forces them to acknowledge the trade-off.
Precisely. It changes the conversation from you being difficult to a strategic discussion about resource allocation. It's not about saying no anymore. It's about prioritizing effectively.
Clever. Okay, so we've said no, we've cleared space. Now execution. The source says it should feel effortless. That sounds nice, but unlikely.
Well, effortless might be aspirational, but the idea is to design the execution process so it's smooth, not a constant uphill battle. Preparation is key. Remember Lincoln's quote.
Give me 6 hours to chop down a tree, and I will spend the first four sharpening the axe.
That's the mindset. Sharpen the axe first. And part of that is dealing with our own biases, like the planning fallacy.
Right. The fact that we consistently underestimate how long things will take, even if we've done them before, our optimism gets in the way.
Always. We think, oh, this time will be different. It rarely is.
So what's the simple essentialist fix?
Just add a buffer, a significant one. The rule of thumb suggested is add 50% to your time estimate.
50%. So if I think a report takes 2 hours, I should block out three.
Yep. That buffer protects you from unexpected delays, interruptions, or just underestimation. It builds in resilience and makes the process feel less frantic, more effortless.
That makes sense. Less stress, more realistic planning.
And when executing, the goal isn't necessarily massive leaps every day. It's about making minimal, viable progress. Small, consistent wins.
Building momentum.
Exactly. Like that example from the Richmond Police Department with their positive tickets.
Right. Instead of just punishing bad behavior, they started ticketing kids for doing good things, like picking up litter.
Yeah. Rewarding those small, positive actions had a huge impact over time. Youth recidivism dropped dramatically from like 60% down to 8%.
Wow. Because small wins build on each other.
They create a self-reinforcing cycle of success. And maintaining that cycle requires staying focused in the present.
What does that mean in practice?
It means constantly asking, like that rugby coach Larry Gelwicks taught his players, what's important now?
Win.
What's important now? It grounds you in the present task. It connects back to the ancient Greek ideas of time. They had chronos, clock time, quantitative.
Tick-tock.
Right, but they also had kairos.
Which is more like the right time, the opportune moment, qualitative time.
Exactly. Kairos is the quality of the moment. Essentialists learn to tune in to kairos,
mm-hmm.
to be fully present, doing the right thing right now with their full attention. That's peak execution.
Okay, so pulling it all together, we've gone from being that overwhelmed non-essentialist reacting to everything
to becoming a focused essentialist living by design.
And the core practices are clear. First, discern what's truly vital, that top 20%.
Then, dare to say no gracefully but firmly to almost everything else. eliminate the non-essential.
And finally, design systems using buffers, routines, focusing on what's important now to make executing the vital few as effortless as possible.
It really is a path to liberation, you know, moving away from just meeting everyone else's expectations and towards living a life that actually aligns with your own values and purpose.
Because life is short, we don't get infinite time.
We really don't. Which brings us to a final thought for you to consider. A challenge, maybe.
Okay, let's hear it.
Ask yourself this. Is it at all likely that you'll reach the end of your life, look back, and genuinely say, gee, I wish I'd been less true to myself. I wish I'd spent more time doing all those non-essential things other people wanted me to do.
Probably not. The regret usually goes the other way.
Almost certainly. So the essential choice, starting today, is to become unreasonably selective about how you spend the precious time you have left. Choose design, not default.